All right, good morning, everybody. We're at it again. It is Thursday, and thank you for joining us. We'll let some people file in here, but appreciative of everybody who's here in day in, day out. Wanted to be the first to welcome you to Bitcoin Veteran Spaces, number 223, where we talk about all kinds of things, including Bitcoin and other stuff. Let's see. We do this space every weekday at 10 a.m. Eastern. My name is Bob Van Kirk. I'm up here all by myself. So please hit that microphone button if you can come up. We do have a special guest today, and I have sent him an invite, but hopefully he can join the stage soon. But would love to have others up here as well. I see a few listeners here that join us quite frequently. So good morning to all of you folks. But let's jump into the Bitcoin stats for the day. Let's see, what do we got here, guys? It is Thursday, July 17th, 2025. And we are at Bitcoin block height number 905,964. With the Bitcoin price at $118,400, which means you can still pick up 845 sats for each US dollar. And yeah, as I said, we have a guest with us this morning. He joined us about a month ago, Dr. Chase Spears. He is an Army veteran and writer and host of the Finding Your Spine podcast. And if you were with us yesterday, we had another podcaster. It was a fun chat with Robin Sayre. He's Austrian. So if you didn't get to listen to that one, go back and listen to that recording. But let's see. We got Chase up here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Bob. It's great to be with you guys again. I appreciate the opportunity to join in the conversation.
Yeah, sometimes I'm up here and I wonder if I'm just talking into the abyss. So thanks for joining me up here, but would love to get some updates from you. One of the things that's happened since you were on last, not sure how closely you follow it. I know you're more on the probably a very busy guy with your consulting company, your podcast, and then trying to, I think, help in some ways with some of these guys who are being treated unfairly. Yeah, just wanted to get an update from you. How's life been? What have you been working on?
Oh, thanks for asking. Yeah, I tell you what, it's kind of interesting. I remember when I was on active duty thinking to myself that when I get off and retire and leave the military, that one thing I'm looking forward to is being able to set a much more predictable schedule and not having things quite so busy. And it's kind of funny, the line of work that I've landed in, I often tell my wife and she sees it, I work from home now, but I'm every bit as busy, if not busier, than I was on active duty and all over the place as well. So we kind of laugh about it, but the nice thing is that I've been really blessed to be able to do work that I have a deep, tremendous passion for, and I'm getting to work with people whose causes I believe in. A lot of it's trying to help get stories out of veterans who were done wrong over the last few years by the Defense Department. And it's just a joy to be able to sit with them, learn from them, hear their stories, and try to share their stories. And but yeah, we are busy. I got home at about 11 o'clock last night. I was out to dinner with another veteran who flew in from Florida to be on the podcast. And I'm excited about his episode ending. It'll be out in about 4 weeks. And yeah, it's just, but it's a joy. It's a joy, but every day is a little bit different. No day looks the same. And so it kind of goes back to my old standby statement. When you think you have a plan, that's just tell it to God. He'll laugh at you. That's been my experience. So, but it's fun watching these things develop and being able to be a storyteller for what's happening in the military. And I hope that turns into righting some wrongs.
Yeah, it's really good. Thanks for doing that. Tell us a little bit. Last time we were a little pressed for time. It was kind of a hot topic at the time that we wanted to have you on for. and you fit it into your schedule. So I want to say thank you for that. But tell us a little bit about the genesis of this podcast and why you decided to do it, and then what you hope to accomplish through it.
Well, this podcast is really kind of almost a therapeutic project for me, but it's far more than that. It's called Finding Your Spine. So shameless plug to anyone out there who enjoys podcasts. If any podcast listening service that you use, you can find it. And so far, I'm the only one with that title, Finding Your Spine. And it's a wonderful partnership through the Herzog Foundation in Smithville, Missouri. And you can learn more about them at herzogfoundation.com. They're an amazing group. But when I was on active duty back in 2017, I started writing. The Army had sent me to a fellowship at Georgetown University. And I'd always wanted to be a writer. I'd kind of dabbled with the idea of it, but I'd never felt very confident in it. And then while I was at Georgetown, I had some tremendous instructors who really encouraged me in it and helped me figure out how to actually get the attention of editors. And it didn't take long at all for me to actually start getting published. My first big piece was in the Baltimore Sun called A Soldier's Perspective on Bergdahl. And it was based on my experience having been the public affairs officer for the brigade that Bo Bergdahl had deserted. Now, I wasn't the PAO when he deserted the unit. I came afterwards, and trying to be the communication director for that unit every time the anniversary of his abandonment came around was particularly challenging, because here we are. I think as a communicator, we should acknowledge it. And my command is saying, we pretend this never happened and we don't talk about it. And so through that, I wrote this piece, and shocking to me, it went viral. These are just things that I think, and I think, okay, well, I think them, it's probably not that big a deal. And it ended up being an immediate viral hit, made Drudge Report. I had television stations, including WETA, the Washington, D.C.'s PBS affiliate, trying to get me to come on. Got called into the Pentagon over it. It was made very clear to me their displeasure. And so, but I said, hey, look, whatever you want to deal out to me for this, I'll take it like a man. I'm not going to stop writing because I love it, and this is part of who I am now. And so I continued, and I would find that I would have a lot of veterans come up to me, fellow service members, and they say things like, man, Chase, we agree with your positions and we agree with what you're saying, but we can't be seen saying these things out loud. And let me be very clear, the things I was saying were things that should not be controversial. I was no Matt Walsh in the ranks, and I'll mad respect to that man. He's a great American and doing great things. But I was still rather subdued in my arguments. I was just saying things that I thought needed to be said. And I was shocked by how many people would say, we agree, but we can't be seen agreeing because, you know, we might not be liked, or our supervisor might, you know, slap us on the back of the head or whatever. And over time, I went from a place of sympathy and understanding, because I was quickly learning what it was like to take that heat. And it wasn't fun, I can assure you that. But I also felt like this is a responsibility. I want to leave the institution better than I found it, and this is part of how you do that. And so over time, I went from sympathy to my peers who would say these things to me, to frustration, graduating to a point of anger, if you will. And I finally started saying, guys, you got to find your spine. We say we're warriors. We say that we will stand between a bullet and Americans. We say that we are defenders of democracy and that we are the sovereign protectors of the nation. And you're afraid to say basic truths like you should have reasonable fitness standards in the military, or people who don't know which bathroom to use be military leaders. Like these are things that should be completely uncontroversial. This should be like I'm saying that people have noses on their face. And so I just kind of gradually started saying, you need to find your spine. And then I got out into the civilian realm, and I would run into people, same thing. Hey, we like what you're saying. We see your writings. We agree. But I can't be seen liking your stuff or interacting with it, because my boss might not like it, or a family member might not like it. And so it just kind of came to a point. I decided, you know what, this is a message that needs to get out there. And so I didn't plan on becoming a podcaster. I love writing. I feel like I'm in control when I'm a writer. I can go back and I can spell check, and I can, you know, there are no ums when you're writing. There are no awkward pauses. And the writer is in complete control. I love that. And I had several people reach out to me and say, you really need to start a podcast. My wife was one who just kept beating the drum. And so last year, I finally decided, okay, I'll start thinking about it and figure out how to do it. And lo and behold, in December of last year, the Herzog Foundation had an audition for a new podcast series. And they run over a dozen podcasts in their family of podcasts. Most of them are focused on Christian education and cultural worldview. But they said we since we're missing something, we want to add something to the lineup. Here's a night we'd encourage people to come out and audition and give us your pitch. Well, as it so happened, I'd already developed a concept because of my wife and several friends the previous year who said you needed podcast. And so I drove out there about 40 minutes from where I live. I drove over. I kind of went through the Shark Tank interview, if you will, and they loved the concept. And so we're 3 months in. We just released episode 15 this week. And the whole purpose of it, what I'm wanting to accomplish, is for it to be a place of encouragement and a catalyst for people who know what the truth is, who honor and respect the truth, to begin putting the truth to action, to live and labor like the truth matters, to come out of hiding, stop being afraid of people whose opinions should not matter, and determine that if this nation, this way of life that you love matters to you, well, you have responsibility to pass it on like it was passed on to us. And so I hope to be a voice out there who's encouraging more people to stand up, because it just takes one to encourage another one. And then you have two, and then they encourage more. And this can turn into a wave. And I hope to be a part of that.
Yeah, that's really great. And I think, you know, for a lot of us in this space, you know, we've seen one thing you said here at the end was that you, you know, you're encouraging people to speak out about things that they believe in, but also that we want to pass this on. And I think a lot of us in this space specifically look at our country and say, man, it's being beat up and eroded. And a lot of us have identified that the money is a big part of the problem, not the only problem, but a big part of it. And so maybe we can chat a little bit about that too. You know, I don't like to use this, especially when we have guests on, to be a bully. But, you know, this space is centered around veterans, obviously, but then also Bitcoin. And we see that as a solution to a lot of these issues, because it can't be printed out of thin air. So maybe we can touch on that. But I'm curious to know, just because I'm guessing you're not really, you haven't adopted Bitcoin yet. Not sure. But wonder what like your thoughts are about Bitcoin. Like, what do you know about it? Just curious.
You know, this is one of those questions where you've caught me with my pants down. I know of it. I have friends who are into it. It's something that I have not researched. And so I don't know a whole lot about, but I know that there are a lot of people who I think very well of who are into Bitcoin. As a matter of fact, just last night when I was talking with Daniel, I actually mentioned this group because he actually does some stuff in Bitcoin. And I said, well, man, you totally need to be plugged into the Bitcoin veterans. That's probably like a natural, natural connection point for you. And I admitted to him, I said, I'm really, you know, privileged to be able to spend some time with these guys. And I know nothing about Bitcoin. So I'm hoping this will be a way that I can learn some more about it.
Yeah, and we can, you know, take this kind of wherever we want today. So definitely want to give you a chance to kind of share, you know, again, what you're doing, and, you know, kick around the topics around the, I think, injustices that are going on in the military. But yeah, we can also maybe educate you a little bit or allow you to ask us some questions. I think one of the things that happens is, you know, we could get a big group of people up here and gang up on you, and definitely don't want to do that. But it's really this, you know, what I find is that people are either open-minded and want to learn new things or they don't. And, you seem like a guy who, you know, in interviewing people, just in watching some of the podcasts that you've done, you seem, very open-minded to ideas and also, you know, want to encourage people to speak out about things that they believe in. Want to key in on that point, first. Why do you think there were all these people along your path when you're writing that would come up to you and say, hey, I really believe in what you're saying. I really believe that what you're saying is the truth, but I can't be seen with you, or I can't be associated with you, or I can't support you really publicly because of either my job or, you know, what others may think. I want to key in on that. Why do you think that is? And yeah, just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so I think a part of it comes down to two facets that are just natural to human nature. One is we all want someone to say the things that we think. There's a reason, and let me preface this and be very, very clear. I do not think of myself as a hero. Let me get that out there on the record. I'm going to use the term hero a little bit, and it could inadvertently look like I'm trying to promote myself that way, and I'm not. I just don't have a better analogy. So know that I'm just a dude. But we look at stories of people who did heroic things. George Washington and leading the
Did we lose Chase?
Yeah, I don't hear him.
Uh-oh, I think we lost his audio. Okay, we'll hopefully get him back here, but did want to say good morning while we have the chance to the Stage Texas Toast. I think the conversation is going in a great direction. Love hearing from Chase, but we got to get his audio back. Chase, why don't you try dropping if you can hear me, and then we'll bring you back up and see if that works. There he goes. Texas Toast, how are you doing this morning while we fill in the time?
What's up? Good morning. Yeah, interesting guess. I'd followed him, but never really dug into his background or anything. We'll have to get him orange pilled at some point here. It's the only way out. I feel like we could have some things to connect on. I went to Airborne and Army Free Fall, so I'm sure he's got some. We went to some of the same schools if he was a paratrooper. Here we got him requested.
Yep, awesome. I think we have him back. I just approved it. Might take a second here for him to join the stage. Sorry, guys, for the interruption in the conversation, but sometimes this happens. Usually I say, hey, fill in the, go in that comments box, but today, for whatever reason, X Spaces is not allowing the comment box. So hopefully, yeah, I'm not sure why Chase is not up here. Let me send him an invite again. All right, while we wait for that to correct itself, maybe we can jump into a topic just because we want to. something that we've been talking about a lot is kind of pound this security thing with people in France continually getting kidnapped. We've seen it other places in the world, but we got news out in the last, well, it came out of, I think it was announced at Bitcoin Prague that the co-founder of Trezor, who no longer works there, is starting up a company called Glock, Glok. And this is set up to be a company that provides counter-kidnapping training for Bitcoiners and cryptocurrency enthusiasts. And also, sounds like there's an app being developed that can send out distress calls to trusted people. So while we try to get Chase back up here, oh, there, I think we got him. Yes, sir. Thanks for coming back.
What happened on my end? Everything was showing great, but clearly I wasn't coming through. So very sorry about that. I don't know what happened. So third time was a charm, it seems.
You know, the military has a far reach, and maybe they got into Elon's app here and shut you up. So,
Oh
so if
man.
you want to continue your thoughts on free speech and why people would come up to you again, just to kind of tee that up, why people would come up to you
Yeah,
and
sure.
support you.
Yeah, so I think there's probably a two-pronged thing there. I think one, we are drawn to stories of people doing things that we wish we could do. And sometimes that's stories as great as David slaying Goliath, and sometimes it's as simple as someone standing up to a schoolyard bully. And so I think we're naturally drawn to that. When we see someone standing up for something that we know to be true, we're drawn to it, and we want to emulate it because we've seen that person, someone that we probably wish that we shared some of the character strengths of. But then the other flip side of that is fear. Fear is a natural human thing. If you're going up against something that's bigger than you, more powerful than you, and you don't fear it, then something's definitely wrong with you. Like, you're a sociopath at that point. Fear is a natural thing. Courage is not having an absence of fear. It's about acknowledging the fear, seeing the mountain in front of you and saying, but I know I have to do this anyways, and doing it in spite. And that's where I think we see people lacking. That's where the
I can't be seen agreeing with you. I love what you're saying. Comes in with the, we are tying what we wish we could do to the story of someone who's doing it. The fear is, but I can't be seen doing it. I can't be seen even applauding you doing it. And we just have this epidemic of fear. There's this wonderful statement by Winston Churchill. I give to it almost daily. Courage is contagious. Courage is contagious. When you see people doing brave things around you, it makes it easier. We really kind of turned a big part of the cultural tide in the last couple of years by seeing people actually standing up and saying, no, men are men. Women are women. We're done with the gaslighting. And as more people began to do that, it became easier for other people to do it. We saw courage spread like a wildfire. But on the converse of that, so was cowardice. Cowardice spread like a wildfire too. And that was my experience in the ranks, was we have a, I believe that we have no lack of physical courage. There's still, soldiers will jump on grenades, quite literally. There's physical courage isn't the issue. It's that moral courage. Like, are we going to say something when we see something being done wrong? When we see the military doing something that is completely at odds with its espoused values, are we going to say it? I'll give you one example that is just permanently etched in my mind. There was a story, and I don't remember which year, and I don't remember which phase, but it was when we were active in Afghanistan. There was this group of Afghan, I'm using air quotes here, partner soldiers, who were knowingly raping children. Everyone knew it, and you could hear it, the sounds coming from the tents. It was known. And finally, one American E-7 had enough. He decided, not on my watch anymore. I don't care if these guys are partners. I don't care if it'll offend. I'm not going to sit by and do nothing while child rape is happening. And so he confronted one of these guys and literally punched him out and made it clear this isn't happening anymore. And that Sergeant First Class was punished by our Army, who said, well, he violated the rules. No, he did what he knew needed to be done. He saw something that was wrong, and he fixed it, right? The Army came down. And soldiers see that, Marines see that, sailors see that, airmen see that, and they have a fear. We need more guys like that E7 who will say, no, this is wrong. For me, my part was, as a public affairs officer, we have our rules and regulations that say we will not lie to the American public. And I watched the slice of the American public. And so for me to say, hey guys, our oaths say we serve the public, our rules say we don't lie to them, this is pretty simple math to me, but they found that controversial. And for me, it was blindingly obvious to say this. And I knew superiors wouldn't like it. I knew there was a fear factor, but it was like, but the principle is worth more to me than the approval of people who would abet a lie against their own oaths. But there are other people, they're gripped by that fear. So I think that's where the, but I can't be seen supporting you comes in. And I increasingly have led less and less, less space to give people like that any kind of sympathy. And I don't want to be hard-nosed about it. There's some people who I understand are in extraordinarily tough situations. But it kind of goes back to something that I said that's published in the WorldNet article daily that just ran yesterday. Like, if I can't believe that the oath that you took is worth more than the air you exhaled it with, then what can I trust you with?
Yeah, that's really profound. I think, as I think about courage and what you're talking about, it's, I wonder what you think it is that drives some people to stick their neck out there, to actually be courageous when they're facing challenging situations, danger, maybe even like pain. What do you think drove you to stand out and to speak up?
Well, I'll tell you, for me, it was the same thing that I hear when I talk to other people in this podcast. For me, it came down to, I have to be able to look myself in the mirror and not be disgusted. I have to be able to look my children in the face and not feel like a phony, not feel like a pretender. I have to be able to stand next to the soldiers that I lead or that I work with and not feel like I'm selling out when I should be doing what my oath demands. And I've asked that very same question to nearly everyone who's been on the podcast. Like, what was it that made you stand when it was tough? Because the amount of risk that I took pales in comparison to the amount of risk a lot of these people that I bring on faced. And I deliberately find people who kind of sent to the gates of hell and back, because I want to learn from them. I have the same question for them. What got you through? What can I learn to build my resolve? And it's almost to a T. I had to be able to look myself in the mirror. And then a lot of it also comes down to they learned it from their fathers. I tell you what, the importance of fatherhood in our nation, it cannot be estimated highly enough. My dad was very much someone who cared about principle, and every one of them I talked to, almost all of them say my father played a big role in it. He drilled that into me, and I had to be able to look my dad in the face and say I was a son or I was a daughter who knew what honor was and was willing to stand for honor. It's a discipline. You don't just do this overnight. Something that I say whenever I teach crisis communication at the college level is, when you're in a crisis, that's not the time when you figure out what your North Star is and what you figure out what your resolve and your conviction is. That's the time you demonstrate it. These things are practiced. It's a continual discipline. It's every day deciding, I'm going to do what I believe is right today, even though it's not easy. And that's not to say you nail it every time. That's not to say you're perfect every time. Now, one of the interviews that I did yesterday was with a guy named Will Pope, and that one will be out in about 3 weeks. And I go through admitting a key point of failure that I went through when it comes to courage, but what I learned from it, right? Because just because you fall one day doesn't mean you get up. No one's going to be perfect at this. It's a discipline, and you have to continue to practice it. And you know, that's what I hope to encourage more people to do is practice it. Just make one simple choice today that you know could potentially cost you something up against someone who's bigger than you, but you know it's right. And then it gets easier the next time. And it never gets easy. Let me be clear. It never gets easy. But with practice, like everything gets just a little bit easier and a little bit easier and a little bit easier. And some days you're going to have people applauding with you, standing with you. Most days you're not. Most days you're going to stand alone. And that's just the reality of leadership, and that's the reality of taking a stand. And that's, we see that all throughout history with people who've done this. Samson lived an incredibly lonely life. So, but he knew what his mission was, and he did it.
Hopefully, we didn't lose your audio there again.
Do you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you. So one of the things, you know, we're talking a little bit about courage, and then you kind of shifted too, which I really like, into this idea of leadership. And so it's a little bit bigger, right? You have leaders need to have courage. And I'm wondering what kind of themes you're seeing with your guests. Obviously, you can procure them, and you have a certain target that you're going after. But what do you see with leaders, you know, in that courage realm? I'm curious, because I do think it hits home with a lot of us, you know, whether we were in the military or not, that, you know, you might be a father, you might be, you know, a leader in a business. And so, yeah, just curious to hear from you, maybe some of the themes that you've picked out from your podcast guests so far. What are you hearing?
That's a really good question. I think some commonalities are one, just about all of them. I think actually all of them have been parents, our parents. And so they have an appreciation for you know, leading a home and raising children. I think all of them were definitely raised in homes that espoused traditional values and espoused and valued courage. Not all of them, but the majority of them. But mostly, the thing that I sense in common among all of them is they're all very rooted in what the most important purpose is to them. And they're willing to not be popular to do it. And that's, I find that to be true, whether it be a mother who's on a school board, who's never served a day of her life in the military, all the way up to full colonel, who's still in, still serving. But their whole purpose of serving was not because they're chasing the purpose of being in the military, being on the school board, or the various you know, occupations and paths that these people walk. One thing that I find consistent is they're all attached to a purpose. And so what they do vocationally is in order to serve that grander purpose. And I think a lot of us get it the other way around, where we say the point of living is to support that job. I'm sure among the veterans in the room, I heard this a lot. We had this great saying in the Army, your family's there and serves with you. And it's a good saying, and I'm not trying to knock the saying, but as I got to reflecting the last couple of years in the Army, I got to thinking, you know what, it's interesting. It's almost like that saying is a reflection of the culture that says the purpose that you exist for is to fulfill a military role, and your family member is there in order to further enable you to fulfill this military role. So the family, we want to honor them with their ancillary. And I had to realize, like, no, I joined the military to support and enable my family and to make life better for my family. And they had this kind of mindset. They know that their roles, whatever it is there to help them on their mission to, whether it be to raise families, to, for those who have already raised their families in their empty nesters, to pass on a world that is still congruent with freedom and ordered liberty to their grandchildren. They're on mission, and they don't let things distract from that. I think that's the biggest theme that I see among them. And I gotta tell you, it challenges me and it encourages me to continue in this line of work, crazy though it sometimes is, because you know they're building me up, and I hope by sharing their stories it will build others up.
Yeah, thanks for that. And I think, one of the things that you got me thinking about is just that you have, well, with these themes, I mean, I think it's really cool to kind of see what's going on. But on like the negative side of things, and I don't mean to be negative, but you see a lot of people, I think, that don't know what to stand for or what they stand for, and they kind of blow around with the topics of the day. And we see this with especially like in public office. And recently you wrote a letter to stand up against the county commission, or was it a it was a local government
Yeah,
that
the
had
commission.
proclaimed. Yeah, do you can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So I live in Lansing, Kansas, which is just on the south end of Fort Leavenworth, and I'm sure a lot of people in the room are know where that is. We're up in the northeast end of the state, greater Kansas City, Missouri area. And you would think this area would be pretty rooted to reality. I'll just throw the term conservative out there, and I don't mean that in a political sense. I mean it in a, just being rooted in what is true, what is right, what is beautiful, as T.S. Eliot would say. And but there's a very hardcore progressive undercurrent here. And so the mayor of Leavenworth at the end of June, of course, June has been taken over as a so-called Pride Month in recent years. And this year we saw a big pushback on that, which was long overdue. And the mayor of Leavenworth, a woman named Holly Pittman, decided like 4 days before the end of the month to do this big city proclamation. And she filled the city commission room with all these activists and did her own pride proclamation. And she did it unilaterally. She didn't get any, she did not get a vote of the city commission on it. It was just something she decided she wanted to do. It was kind of a big PR stunt. And so I decided to go speak before the county commission on that. And my argument was, yeah, a city administrator who's done something she should not have done, that was out of the proper responsibility that she has as a leader. And so, if when one magistrate at one level is in the wrong, what do? You appeal to the next level magistrate. So I went to the county commission and I spoke before them and made an argument of, lady and gentlemen, this is inappropriate. And the purpose of government is to reward virtue and punish vice, to encourage people to do the right thing and to punish those who do not. And the law is a teacher. When government officials give sanctions to something, they are teaching, they're making a moral lesson. This is good, this is right, this is not good, this is bad. And it is the role of government to say what is right, what is true. Not, government doesn't create what is right, what is true. Government acknowledges what is right, what is true. And I said the city misacknowledged. So you as a county need to acknowledge what is true, what is right. You need to read this, and you need to proclaim the value of traditional family and the value that brings to a stable society and the goodness of that. And so I went and made that appeal to them, and I decided afterwards to go ahead and write it up as an article as well, and to try to offer that as an example to others in other parts of the nation who may want to do the same. I said, here's what I did, here's the argument I made, and here's the text of a proclamation you can copy and paste if you want to go talk to your city, county, state, because I want to be part of helping fix things. And so I went and made that speech. They actually did put that proclamation on the list of items to formally consider. I was back at the county commission just yesterday, because the day before the next meeting, the local newspaper ran a front page story about it. And so it had some interest. So we did have one person come and speak kind of against it, saying, that it would be exclusionary and that, pride is all inclusive and a family proclamation might make some people feel excluded, which is a false argument. So I went and defended it again yesterday. And unfortunately, the chairman of the county commission is, he acknowledges the goodness of it. He acknowledges that it'd be a good thing to do. But he is also appears to be concerned about the activists. And so he has punted it to next week. And so I will be back there next week and the week after if need be. But this is, yeah, it's time that we stop sitting to the side and saying, woe is us. People who disagree with us and people who want to destroy our values have a seat at the table and we don't. Well, guess what? They got a seat at the table because they showed up to the table. They showed up to the meeting. They engaged the civic process while we weren't. And so I'm re-engaging the civic process, and I'm hoping others will do the same. Yesterday there were a lot more people in that room who believe in traditional values than there were who don't. And we need to demonstrate to our lawmakers, like we have your backs on this. This is the right thing to do, and you really should be more concerned about those of us in the community who are investing here, but rather than the activists who are just making noise.
Yeah, it's too bad that some of these folks are so influenced by the loud voices, but it's good to have, that counterpoint. One of the topics that, we could cover here, I'm not sure if you heard about this, but there is this, and I think a lot of people have suspected it for a long time, but there's this thing called crowds on demand where you can like rent a protest. Have you heard about this?
I have not heard of crowds on demand per se, but yeah, I'm very familiar with the topic. And I mean, we see it every one of these mass protest movements that we see where people suddenly flood into these major American cities. Well, it's interesting that there's always a group of tour buses, or a fleet, I should say, of tour buses, right there on the edge of the city, and the brakes are
Chase, are you there? Sorry, we have I hit my microphone and it muted
Can you hear
everybody.
me
Are you
now?
there? Yep,
Can you
I
hear
can
me
hear.
now? Okay. Yeah, well, I'm
You were
sorry.
talking you got cut off at the tour buses. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, every time we see one of these major protests in American City, DC, Boston, wherever, it's interesting that right on the edge of town there's always a fleet of these late model tour buses that are just parked waiting, like, oh, what are you doing here? Of course they're busing these protests in, and then they're busing them out. And so yeah, it's almost there's almost kind of a level of military precision in how this is going on. These movements are not organic.
Yeah, I really think something like that should be illegal. Because essentially what happens is you have big corporations or you have political groups that just have money, and there's people that want to do this stuff and they have jobs, and this way they have jobs, and so they can just round up a bunch of people, send them in, and it makes it look like there's actually some kind of groundswell of support for a certain topic that there's really not. And then the news media covers it because they're paid by the same corporations, by through advertising. And so it's just, yeah, I think this should be 100% illegal. Curious to hear your thoughts on it. And obviously, it's something hard to fight against.
Oh, I completely agree. It should be illegal. I'm a big First Amendment supporter, freedom of speech, but you shouldn't be able to organize to show up and destroy American cities. I mean, that's just that kind of stuff should be what the FBI exists for. And this, if you really want to get into an argument that's going to probably be a little bit controversial, and I'm happy to go there. This is one of the angst with how we employ the military today. What is the purpose of Congress raising an army? It's very simple. The answer is to protect and defend Americans from threats to liberty. And we're sending our army continually to Poland and Germany and Korea and still to Iraq and all these other places. We have boots on ground in the majority of nations in the world in one way or another. And yet we have these groups right here in our own nation that are causing disorder, that are causing havoc. We until recently had a very porous border where a division worth of military age males were coming across on a routine basis. Our our threat to America today is not on a foreign field of battle where tank-on-tank warfare is going to happen. It's been there before. It might, at some point in history, be there again in the future. But it's not where the threat to America is now. The threat to America right now is in this cognitive space. It's in the space of ideas. It's in the space of mass psychological operations where people are manipulating the public to be blind to clear threats around them and to be scared into giving up their liberties. I mean, you just see over and over again that the people who, the elites, they create crises, scare people, and then show up, oh, well, now we have a solution. Now we have a solution. If you pay us in this way, give up a little bit of freedom, give up a little more of your capital, place more of your belief in us, place more of your security in us, then we'll fix the problem. And they gain more power, and then they rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat. And this is a big issue that I had to come to terms with in my last few years on active duty as a public affairs officer. I'd spent years praising the military and telling the public, oh, yeah, you can trust the military. Great, trustworthy institution. We serve the American public. Yada, yada, yada. Fill in whatever boilerplate, you know, bumper sticker saying that we are all used to hearing. But I believed them. I really believed them. And the more I got to watching, and I started asking myself, but what are we actually doing to defend America? Because I'm watching American cities burn. I'm watching crime go through the roof. I'm watching people who are not here legally come over and face no consequence while Americans are being held to high levels of, of order to the law. What's going on here? Something's not coming out in the mix. And so I'm deeply concerned about this. This is a topic that I'm glad to hear you bring it up because it's on my mind as well. People have got to start thinking with their own brain health and group and just looking around. All right, what is actually happening in our nation? And I'm not saying we all need to put tinfoil on our hats and listen to AM radio at 3 a.m, right? There's a danger in that. But to be wise, to be discerning, and stop just taking what MSNBC tells you is gospel. Do your own homework.
Yeah, those are really good points. And even, you know, in this particular space, I also it gets me thinking about how much propaganda is out there. And it's not just, you know, in one little area. And for the longest time, I think we've identified this, but people did trust the government up until a certain point. Once they realized that they were being lied to, I think for a lot of people, they do start going down some of these rabbit holes. And to your point, I don't think all the conspiracy theorists are out for your good, but I do think that they point out a lot of different, we'll call them either at best anomalies in the messaging, or at worst, it's full on propaganda. It's a psyop to get you to act a certain way or to purchase a certain thing or to, even devote your life to something that's completely fleeting. And so, curious to hear your thoughts. I mean, would you call it propaganda?
Oh, yeah, we are so inundated with propaganda today on scales that even Orwell would just be astounded by. The communication architecture that we have today is unlike anything in human history. And I tell people, we as human beings are the same creatures that our ancestors were. We are no more enlightened. We are no smarter. We are no wiser. People, we like to pretend like we're the culmination of history. And this is kind of the great progressive way of thinking, that we have progressed along this arc of morality. And that we are now, we, our generation, us in the living 21st century, we are the culmination of history. We are the enlightened. We are the tolerant. We don't suffer any of the ills of our ancestors. And we're no different than them. We are every bit as barbaric as they were in some ways, and every bit as good as they were in other ways. And they would look at us and judge us with intense criticism, probably more so than we judge them. And so we have to realize that we're just one generation among many, many. But what we do have that differs from what our ancestors had is this global instinct communication architecture. I mean, even in this X space, my dad didn't have this capability, right? None of our parents did. This is something new to us, that we can be on the social media platform, be talking to people around the world in real time like this, and it cost us, you know, just our internet access to do that. And so propaganda sits so quickly. We used to say that, a lie gets halfway around the world, while the truth is tying its shoes. A lie gets from here to the moon in the time it takes now. to tie the shoes. And so it's just amazing to me, though, how easily people are swayed. I'll give you an example. We have a family member right now, a man who I've admired for many years, who I once thought to be a very wise guy, someone up to, someone I kind of saw as a role model, beyond the fact that he was a family member. But he has insulated himself in the last couple of years since COVID. He just gets his news basically from the Washington Post, and that is you. And you can't tell him that there's anything other than what the Washington Post tells him the truth is. And now he has so regressed into that way of thinking that he's now cut us out of his life. And it is heartbreaking. I mean, this is a relationship of nearly 30 years. And, you know, and that's what people are doing. They're retrenching. And, you know, it's the propaganda is very real. We talk about how the World War One Museum is just down the road from where I live here in Kansas City. And they've got this one section with all the World War One propaganda folders, or I'm sorry, posters. And there's this kind of idea, almost of smugness, that we come up with. The museum doesn't push this. The museum's just displaying it for us to learn from. But it's easy to look at that and think to ourselves kind of smugly, like, well, I wouldn't fall for that. I wouldn't fall for that. I wouldn't fall for that. Well, then look around. Look around and see what we're falling for every single day that makes the World War One propaganda posters look like child's play. And so, yeah, we are surrounded by, I'm especially sensitive to it as a public affairs officer. During the whole COVID era, nearly every message the military was pushing was propaganda. And I'm going to point that out to peers and say, like, this is the definition of propaganda. This is the lie we said read, never tell. And it was always, well, this is what we're told to do. And I was, you know, in the goodness of God, I was shielded from ever having to push that because I finished my career in a training role. But I had peers who agreed with me, who were on the front line as spokesmen, and we had these discussions. I said, guys, you can't push that. You know it's a lie. They said, yeah, we know it's a lie, but it's what our commander expects us to do. And that's why you need courage to be able to stand to a commander and say, as Sultan Neeson did, hey, you can let the light come, but I'm not going to be a part of it.
Yeah, and you know, like the pendulum is swinging the other way, I think a little bit, which some of us enjoy. And so, like, you know, if you pay attention to what Congress has been doing in this space, we've been talking about that it's crypto week, and so we're getting these three bills. But one of the other bills that I think the one side of the aisle especially is going nuts on is this defunding of the public broadcasts. And you know, Trump and his administration has accused them of being very biased. And now I think we're going to see a whole new push from that side to challenge that. But the bill looks like it's going to pass if it hasn't already. And so at least there's a little bit of a fight to push some of that back. Curious to hear your thoughts on the defunding of things like NPR and other you know, government-sponsored broadcasts.
I think if that bill goes through and they do defund it, I may have to break city law and go outside and set off some fireworks. This is just something that's been needed to be done for such a long, long time. Traditional media has to earn its place through advertising. Why do we have PBS? Now, the argument is, well, we serve the public interest. And that's the pithy statement like we heard the military say about why everything is related to readiness except rifle marksmanship in the last few years. So tell me how you're serving the public interest because you are lying. Now I like a good Nova documentary as much as anyone else, but if it's that great, let them have to source the advertisers for it. PBS has been so hardcore left-wing, and it's not just recently. When I was 7 years old and watching some of that stuff on PBS, even my little pea brain at that point in time could tell there's an agenda behind this. They're trying to draw me to think that the left way of thinking is the correct way of thinking. And they've done that unashamedly, unabashedly, openly for years. They have called people like us extremists. They have joined in on every propaganda move that the elites have done in my lifetime. And so if they want to continue to exist, that's their right to continue to exist, just like it's MSNBC's right to do the exact same thing. But MSNBC has to source advertisers for it, so let's let PBS do the same thing. And if they can't survive in that environment, well, then they don't survive. And so I think this is a good move. I'm often critical of the administration for not moving as quick as I want them to on a lot of military things, and I'm being more outspoken on that of late. But I tell you what, there's a lot of promises they're keeping, and this is one that I'm thrilled to see them keeping it, and I hope that goes through. Now, to your point about the left isn't going to take it lying down, you're absolutely right. And that's where we have to be cautious, that there's this tendency of thinking, all right, we got our guy across the line in November, we have our president, we have the House, we have the Senate, all is well. We as people who believe in ordered liberty can kind of go back to our homes now and pick up life, and we don't have to worry about, being hauled away by the FBI for saying to a school board, hey, do the right thing anymore. That's the wrong way of thinking. Just like in a military battle, you hit the enemy, and what do they do? They're going to pull back, they're going to rebuild, they're going to reinforce, they're going to plan a counterattack because it is a war, and we are in a cultural state of war. We have been for quite some time. So this is not the time to rest, to relax, to let our foot off the gas. This is the time we have momentum, and momentum is the best thing you can have when you're in a fight. We have to keep going. We have to keep pushing forward. Have to keep demanding. Oh, we knock down that sacred idol. We're going to take now right after the next sacred idol. Okay, we defunded PBS. Next, we're coming for all the DEI programs at universities. Next, we're going for this. Next, we're going for that. I mean, this is a relationship of nearly 30 years, and and that's what people are doing. They're retrenching. We're doing. They're retrenching, and it's the propaganda is very real. We talk about how the World War I Museum is just down the road from where I live here in Kansas City, and they've got this one section with all the World War I propaganda folders, or I'm sorry, posters. And there's this kind of idea, almost of smugness, that we come up with. The museum doesn't push this. The museum's just displaying it for us to learn from. But it's easy to look at that and think to ourselves kind of smugly, like, well, I wouldn't fall for that. I wouldn't fall for that. I wouldn't fall for that. Well, then look around. Look around and see what we're falling for every single day that makes the World War I propaganda posters look like child's play. And so, yeah, we are surrounded by, I'm especially sensitive to it as a public affairs officer. During the whole COVID era, nearly every message the military was pushing was propaganda. And I'll point that out to peers and say, like, this is the definition of propaganda. This is the lie we said we'd never tell. And it was always, well, this is what we're told to do. And also, I was, in the goodness of God, I was shielded from ever having to push that because I finished my career in a training role. But I had peers who agree with me, who were on the front line as spokesmen, and we had these discussions. I said, guys, you can't push that. You know it's a lie. They said, yeah, we know it's a lie, but it's what our commander expects us to do. And that's why you need courage to be able to stand up to a commander and say, as Solzhenitsyn did, hey, you can let the light come, but I'm not going to be a part of it.
Yeah, and like the pendulum is swinging the other way, I think a little bit, which some of us enjoy. And so, if you pay attention to what Congress has been doing in this space, we've been talking about that it's crypto week, and so we're getting these three bills. But one of the other bills that I think the one side of the aisle especially is going nuts on is this defunding of the public broadcasts. And Trump and his administration has accused them of being very biased, and now I think we're going to see a whole new push from that side to challenge that. But the bill looks like it's going to pass if it hasn't already. And so at least there's a little bit of a fight to push some of that back. Curious to hear your thoughts on the defunding of things like NPR and other government-sponsored broadcasts.
I think if that bill goes through and they do defund it, I may have to break city law and go outside and set off some fireworks. This is just something that's been needed to be done for such a long, long time. Traditional media has to earn its place through advertising. Why do we have PBS? Now, the argument is, well, we serve the public interest. And that's the pithy statement like we heard the military say about why everything is related to readiness except rifle marksmanship in the last few years. Just tell me how you're serving the public interest because you are lying. Now I like a good Nova documentary as much as anyone else. But if it's that great, let them have to source the advertisers for it. PBS has been so hardcore left-wing, and it's not just recently. When I was 7 years old and watching some of that stuff on PBS, even my little pea brain at that point in time could tell there's an agenda behind this. They're trying to draw me to think that the left way of thinking is the correct way of thinking. And they've done that unashamedly, unabashedly, openly for years. They have called people like us extremists. They have joined in on every propaganda move that the elites have done in my lifetime. And so if they want to continue to exist, that's their right to continue to exist, just like it's MSNBC's right to do the exact same thing. But MSNBC has to source advertisers for it. So let's let PBS do the same thing. And if they can't survive in that environment, well, then they don't survive. And so I think this is a good move. I'm often critical of the administration for not moving as quick as I want them to on a lot of military things, and I'm being more outspoken on that of late. But I tell you what, there's a lot of promises they're keeping, and this is one that I'm thrilled to see them keeping it, and I hope that goes through. Now, to your point about the left isn't going to take it lying down, you're absolutely right, and that's where we have to be cautious. That there's this tendency of thinking, all right, we got our guy across the line in November. We have our president, we have the House, we have the Senate, all is well. We as people who believe in ordered liberty can kind of go back to our homes now and pick up life, and we don't have to worry about, being hauled away by the FBI for saying to a school board, "Hey, do the right thing," anymore. That's the wrong way of thinking. Just like in a military battle, you hit the enemy. What do they do? They're going to pull back. They're going to rebuild, they're going to reinforce, they're going to plan a counterattack because it is a war and we are in a cultural state of war. We have been for quite some time. So this is not the time to rest, to relax, to let our foot off the gas. This is the time we have momentum, and momentum is the best thing you can have when you're in a fight. We have to keep it on. We have to keep pushing forward. Have to keep demanding. We knock down that sacred idol. We're going to take now, we're after the next sacred idol. Okay, we defunded PBS. Next, we're coming for all the DEI programs at universities. Next, we're going for this. Next, we're going for that. Because if we don't, they're going to reinforce, reentrench, and they'll counterattack hard. And so this, it's easy for us. We want to win a battle, and then we want to go back to our lives. We're not activists. We just want to live our lives. The other side, though, is revolution. And I commend the reading Alexander Solzhenitsyn to you. The activists, they're committed. They were committed in every revolutionary, whether it be 1917 in Russia, whether it be 1953 in China, and they're committed here now. And so we can't take our feet off the gas. This is going to be a prolonged fight, but it's a fight we must engage children, our grandchildren, and the future of this nation.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. And we're coming up to the top of the hour. I want to be respectful of your time, but did say maybe we introduce you a little bit to Bitcoin. But I think the way to do that best is to speak maybe a little bit in your language. So definitely a great communicator, and want to thank you again for the topics that we've been able to cover today. But I wonder what your thoughts are just on this statement that money is the communication of value. So like in a modern society, money serves as a communication of value amongst the people. Do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that.
And so the big issue is not actually, I would have you not focus on Bitcoin and what you either know or think you don't know about it, but I'd have you focus on the fact that, everybody knows we have a huge amount of debt in this country. And other countries around the world do as well. And if you look at it, they just voted to raise the debt ceiling, I think last week or the week before, $5 trillion. Now, they haven't spent that money yet, but they have authorized themselves to do so. And in doing so, they're basically going to have to create that money out of thin air because they're not going to increase the productivity enough in the United States and around the world to cover that borrowing. And so, what a lot of people don't know is that Bitcoin is finite, can't be created out of thin air like dollars. And so, a lot of people find a little bit of hope in saving their hard-earned money in Bitcoin, excuse me, because the government can just create money out of thin air at will. So, if you're holding on to that money, if you're holding on to dollars, you're being debased, you're being stolen from. And so I wonder what your thoughts are as we kind of close this out. I just wanted to kind of lay that out there for you simply, not super technical, not talking outside of what you know to be true, and wonder what your thoughts are, and maybe you'll have to think about it, but I just want to
All right,
kind of
so there,
leave you
Bob,
with
I
that.
lost you.
Yep, go ahead. Did you hear the end there? I just wanted to leave you with thoughts
Anything
on
else for
that.
me?
Can you guys give us a thumbs up if you can hear me in the audience? I can hear you, Chase, but I don't think you can hear me. All right, now people can. I think people can hear me, but not Chase. Chase, can you hear me? Yeah, I think I lost him. Oh, that's a bummer. But yeah, guys, we are coming to the end of the show. Hopefully we can get him back on, because I would love to just see his thoughts on the simplicity of looking at the current system and the difference with Bitcoin. But let's do this. Maybe we can, oh, there's Chase. Let's see if we can get him back up here real quick before we end the show. All right, Chase, do we have you back, sir? Give us a second, guys. Appreciate the patience. I see Chase in the audience, but I'm not seeing him being able to come up on stage. Well, hopefully you can go back and listen to this. What we might do is just end it, but I think we're going to have him back. I think this was really good. We got Coleman up here, maybe to close it out too. And BitPetro. Hey, guys. BitPetro, did you have comments while we try to recycle Chase? Yes, sir. Yep.
Sudden, just audio went dead. So I guess the gremlins are getting us. I think I caught up to the end before the audio cut out of where you were saying the benefit of Bitcoin being that it's finite, that one can't just manufacture more out of thin air. And then that's the point I lost you on the other. I don't know. I'd love to hear what you're saying after that, if there's still time, real quick.
Yeah, we can do that. And really, the idea was actually just summed up right after that dollars are unlimited. And when the government overspends and they don't have productivity in the economy in order to create those dollars, they just must be printed. And by printing, creating more dollars, if you and I are saving in those dollars, we're being stolen from effectively. We're being diluted. And so what a lot of people find hope in the Bitcoin space is that they can actually escape this and hold Bitcoin instead of dollars because they're finite. And it aligns with the laws of nature. So kind of like what you were talking about, actually related to the nuclear family, where you want to fight for that because it's real, it's truth, it's the best thing for our society. This is how we think about Bitcoin, or at least I do. And I'm just curious to hear your thoughts. If looking at the existing system and then knowing that Bitcoin is finite, and again, maybe you have to think about it, but does that give you kind of at least a basis to start from in terms of what Bitcoin is?
Yeah, that's very helpful. And thank you for that, because that's a fundamental that I did not know about. It's just something, admittedly, and I realize I'm in a room with people who are very intelligent on this. I'm the guy in the corner with the dunce cap on this topic, because I just haven't researched it. And so I thought it was really neat when you actually reached out to me a few weeks ago and invited me on, because I was like, hey, it's a neat opportunity to learn from some people about something that I'm totally ignorant on. That's definitely an encouragement to me, because I share your deep concerns about the current monetary system, where we print this funny money. There's no way that ends well long-term historically. I like having fixed assets. I think that's a staple. I mean, that's why all of us want to own homes and things that go up in value that can't just be manufactured off thin air. And so, yeah, that definitely piques my interest to know more.
Yeah, that's great. And do want to be respectful of your time, but did want to give maybe Coleman or BitPetro a chance to ask you a question real quick before we close up for the day.
Yeah, that'd be great. I can hang for about five more minutes before my next hard time.
Sounds good. Coleman, BitPetro, good morning.
Good morning. Chase, really admire what you're doing. Really, really great work. I've had my fair share of throws with local government, and so I really applaud what you're doing. I would ask that you maybe dive into Bitcoin a little bit, because it seems that you have a lot of knowledge in how to approach local government. and maybe educate them. And that's something that I believe is very necessary. My approach is to go after the university and my industry, because it's what I know. And I encourage people to do that as well.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Well, it's definitely something I'm going to do a little bit more reading on and research on. And the great thing is I'm connected with this great group now. And so there's no better place to learn with them, with the people who are actually in the trenches doing the work in it.
Yeah. I think we tend to overcomplicate it, you know, cause a lot of us have been in this space for a long time, digging deep. But for a lot of people who don't necessarily understand it, you know, I think we just need to keep it simple. So hopefully my little simple explanation, I think it's really Bitcoin only makes sense if you look at the existing system and where it's going. And so I think we'll leave it with that. But I really want to thank you. And thanks, BitPetra, for coming up. Unfortunately, we're having some spaces issues. I know Coleman wanted to come up and maybe chat with you and Wade as well, trying to get him up, but he just can't get it to work. So we'd love to have you back, though, and love the topic. Love, you know, that you're standing up for leadership and courage and free speech and natural order and helping military veterans have a voice as well. And so really want to thank you for all that you're doing, your podcast. And guys, please check out the podcast. It is centered around courage. I mean, at least in the name. And from the ones I've watched, he's had on some pretty great guests. But Finding Your Spine podcast with Dr. Chase Spears. Go check it out. He's on every platform. And if you want to see him in action, it is on YouTube as well. But guys, that's all we have time for today. We're a little over. Really, thank you again, Chase, for staying over. And hopefully we can get some of these spaces issues fixed. But want to wish everybody a great Thursday and remind everybody, don't shitcoin. Save yourself some time and just send a check to the VCs that back them.
People that use fiat currency as a store of value, we call them core.